I'm Tolga. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here. I've come down before to hear my grand sponsor speak, maybe like 10 years ago, actually, and I remembered where I was coming. So it's a privilege and honor to speak anywhere, and especially when you get to drive so far. It feels good to do something in AA. My sobriety date is February 16, 2001. I have a home group. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor some guys. And I've done the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hopefully will continue to do them. So I'll tell you in the general area what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I'd like your reading that you read. It's because it is really about my experience with God, and that's really how I got sober. And so it's good to be reminded of that. So that was nice. For me, it started in a place very, very far away from here. I was born in Amsterdam, and that doesn't make me an alcoholic. I came here when I was 5, and I had a normal childhood, played soccer, everything was normal, you know, good family. We had 3 kids. I was 1 of 3, and parents were together. No one drank really that much. Everything was pretty normal. And I would say around age 12, I started to feel different. And I wouldn't have, you know, put in those words back then for me, but from age 12 to 16, I got more uncomfortable with just the world. And maybe that's normal, maybe it's not, I don't know. I just know that for me, I got, you know, the school was like, he's depressed, right? They said I was depressed. Looking back, it was clear that I was irritable, restless, and discontent. I even remember when I was 12, I remember thinking, like, is this it? Is this what life has to offer? Like, I felt like I was gypped. Like, it was like this, like, I was like, this sucks. You know what I mean? And I remember, I mean, I even told my dad that. He was kind of disappointed. I kind of hurt him. And I just wasn't, you know, I wanted more. There wasn't more out of life, you know. I don't know what I wanted, but it wasn't what I had, you know. I had everything I ever wanted, really, you know. I had bikes and skateboards and stuff like that I wanted as a child. But I didn't feel like it was enough. And I went to school, and I had this, like, this lingering feeling of, like, fear with other kids. And you know, I would act out. And so I was, like, a class clown. I got in a little bit of trouble here and there. But I didn't really, like, but I wasn't comfortable, you know. And so I had to act out to get attention, to feel good. And I feel like I had to be number one to just feel equal to. And I just had these feelings, and those feelings got worse. And what I didn't realize is that I probably needed a drink. And the reason I say that is because on my 16th birthday, I had 9 shots of vodka back-to-back, and I finally felt really good. I mean, I remember thinking, like, oh, I never have to feel the way I used to feel ever again. And I felt good. I ran around this guy's house, and I could say what I wanted to say, be who I wanted to be, and I felt free. And it just felt so good. And I didn't start drinking every day, but I knew what made me feel better. And for some reason, I did start smoking weed every day. That's just what we did up there. And I drank when I could. To make a long story short, within 6 months, my high school, they were not appreciating the fact that I was sharing drugs with my friends. And so they decided to send me to, they told my parents they were going to kick me out if I didn't go to rehab. And so I got shipped off to rehab, Deep Run Lodge. It's somewhere around here. And it was like a 3-hour drive from where we were, and in the middle of nowhere. And there they sent me down, and they told me that I had to stop drinking and doing drugs for the rest of my life. And I asked them honestly. I was like, why would I stop doing the only thing that makes me feel good? And I was looking for an honest answer, and the guy said, well, drugs are illegal and you're too young to drink. And I just didn't carry any water with me. I was like, whatever, you know. And so he didn't sell me, but they did tell me 2 weeks later that if you get in a fist fight, you get kicked out of the rehab. And I wish they told me that sooner, but later that day we were playing flag football, and this guy was just being kind of a jerk, and I saw my opportunity to graduate, and I graduated. And my parents were afraid of sending me back to school. They thought I was going to die, which I felt was a little bit extreme, you know, I mean, but looking back, it made sense because I couldn't be controlled, and I did whatever I wanted at that point. Once I started drinking, my whole life shifted. I had, like, a purpose, you know what I mean? Before I was drinking, I didn't really have a purpose. I really just was uncomfortable and unhappy, and I just didn't really care, and I would go to school, and just everything just kind of sucked. But once I was drinking, now I had, like, something that made me feel good, and so I really was like, I'm gonna do it. You know, I'm going to do it when I can, and I did it, and I had a lot of fun doing it. But, you know, I got shipped off to boarding school in upstate New York, and there they gave me the perfect schedule for an alcoholic. I mean, it really was a good schedule. We'd wake up, they'd feed us, we'd go to school, we had to play sports, we would go to study hall, we'd do homework for 3 hours or 2.5 hours, and then they would release us, and we'd all go into the woods and drink and get high every night. And we did it like every night, every day. It was, and we had to be back within an hour and a half. And so every day we got wasted and we came back and we just did it over and again. I mean, it was really a great schedule. And I mean, it was because we didn't have too much time to drink too much, you know what I mean? But we had enough time to like wake up in the morning again. And so we did it. The weekends got a little more crazy. But we did that. I did that for 3 years and I graduated. I got into college and I kept my exact same schedule. I went to Longwood, not too far from here, and I enjoyed it. They just let men in, and I was one of the men that just got in, and I kept the same schedule. In fact, I started my classes at noon. I would finish around 4:30. I would go work out. I'd do study hall. I would do studying, and then at 8:30, I would invite people to my room to drink, and we'd play drinking games. And I did that every night, and I feel like I mastered it because it was, and I got a good GPA because I would start at noon, and I would do my homework. And so I passed the first semester, and I had a blast. My first semester was awesome. I had so much fun. I drank almost every night. I got good grades, and I had a great time. You know, I had some weird situations sometimes, waking up in funny places. But, you know, other than that, I had a good time. My second semester was not – I still had fun, but I got busted for having 6 parties in my room. And when you get – in college, if you get busted for having a party as a freshman once, you go to court, and then they give you a warning, and then you do it again, they kick you out. And I got 6 before I went to court, I guess. And so they gave me a big warning. And then that summer, I went to a concert, and a reggae concert, and I got busted for smoking marijuana, and I got put on piss test. And it was a federal park, so it was like federal police, federal court, and so they were a little more unfriendly about that, and I had to be on piss test. So now I started my third semester with piss test, and I had to go to Richmond every 2 weeks to pee in a cup. And when I was in school, I just drank, and my drinking really took off. Without the drugs, my drinking kind of unleashed itself. You know, the phenomenon of craving, I couldn't have told you that's what was happening at the time, but when I started drinking, you know, I would drink, and then things would happen, and people would get mad at me. You know, I started to experience the decomprehensible demoralization. I would wake up the next day, and I knew my girlfriend was mad at me, and I wasn't really sure why. I just had a sense that she was mad, and I had a sense that I knew I'd done something wrong, and so, like, I knew, like, things like that was starting to happen. I started to feel ashamed. I couldn't look people in the eye, and that's when that started beginning to happen to me. And I started to feel bad. I started to drink more alone. I wasn't as social. You know, I didn't have as much fun. The fun had left, but I was still drinking. And then one night I got drunk and did something a little careless, I guess. I admit, you know, not to be vague because it'll sound worse than it is, but I used to do graffiti. So one night we went and painted a train, then we came back and we drank, and I got drunk, and then I went and started paying the school. And this other guy that was with me got busted, and he told on me, and I got to get 4 felonies charged against me, and I got kicked out of college, and that wasn't a good time. I got kicked out of college, and I had 4 felonies pending, and I had to go to court, and it was like this big, it was terrible. I wasn't making my parents proud, and it felt awful to have to leave semester in the middle of the year, and I would go home, and I really couldn't stay sober because I just was so, it was so unbearable. You know, I mean, every day I just reminded of what happened, and I wasn't in college anymore, so I was stuck, you know, my parents' house. It was very depressing. And I couldn't go a few days. Like, I had to drink to get some relief, you know, because the pressure was really building up at that point. And I went to court. I got a year probation with, like, 3 years of jail over my head, which seemed a little intense. And I had to stay out of trouble. So I was careful. And a friend of mine, I called my friend to see how he's doing. And he said, if you want to hang out with me, you should come to a meeting. He had gone to school in Richmond, and he flipped out on crack. And his mom was in AA and made him go to meetings. And I said, sure, I'll support you. I've been to rehab. I went with him to a meeting. And I got to the meeting, and I got surrounded by you people, and they, somebody convinced me that if I hung out with people in AA, that I could pass the piss test that I had to endure. And it made sense. I was like, you know, that makes sense. Like, I hang out with sober people, I'm not gonna less likely to do bad stuff and more likely to pass the piss test. So I was like, all right, sure. And then I got convinced to get a sponsor, and I got this guy as a sponsor. And but I wasn't convinced that I was a real alcoholic. I wasn't convinced that I was a hopeless alcoholic. You know, I mean, I related to the stories. I related to the way we drank, but I didn't think I was, like, hopeless. And I hadn't hit a bottom, really. And every time my sponsor would tell me to do something, he'd say, you should get a job. I was like, you're right. I should get a job. You know, he's like, you're young. You should ask out girls. I was like, yeah, I should ask out girls. He's like, you should make a list of everyone you resent. And I went home and did that, and I was like, screw this, I'm not gonna do this, and I literally left after starting a 4-step, and anything he suggested that I didn't really agree with, I didn't do, and because I had hit a bottom, I wasn't willing to go to any lengths. I just was convinced that I could pass piss tests by hanging out with you guys, and that's what I did, and after 4 months of being sober, I got very uncomfortable. I got kind of miserable, actually. And I couldn't stand being around AA people because everyone was so happy and I was so miserable. And it just was like, it was just unbearable. And so I really had to, like, get away from AA people. And I after 4 months of being dry, you know, I don't have a drinking problem. I drink very well, even when I have no money. I have a staying sober problem. I can't stay sober and be happy and comfortable. And after 4 months of being sober and not doing any of the steps, and not having any drugs or alcohol, and not taking any medication, I got so uncomfortable. I really couldn't be around you guys. And I left AA. I talked myself out of leaving, and I left. But the seed was planted. You know, they said if you relate to our drinking, you know, you're going to either die, go to jail, or institution. And I felt like, you know, it's funny because I didn't feel like that was that far fetched. You know, I mean, I graduated high school and I was drunk and I passed out and crashed my car going 80 into a tree. So it wasn't like too far fetched of something that could happen. But it's, you know, in my mind, I felt like I got this. Like, I know how I can avoid these things. Like, I can avoid going to jail. I can avoid dying. I can avoid going to mental hospital. Like, these things I can avoid. And so I felt like, okay, like I understand what you're saying. Thank you for the information. I relate to your drinking. And I'm going to avoid those pitfalls, and I appreciate it, but I definitely don't want this for my life. And I don't see myself being, like, older in AA. It didn't fit my dreams and plans, so, you know, it didn't make sense. And so I parted ways, and I spent the next 8 months still on probation, but very, very careful. I would drink at my parents' house only. I was careful because I knew – it's funny because I knew that I was powerless, you know, even though I didn't know how powerless I really was. But I was very, very careful, and I didn't want to get in trouble. So I was very careful, and I remember I went to go see my probation officer, and he said, okay, you don't have to come back. You know, he's like, if you stay out of trouble for the next month, you're good to go. Like, and I don't think I lasted 1 week. I got a paycheck. I got weekly paychecks at that time, and I got a paycheck for $19.99, and it was like a sign that I should like, you know, go get wasted. And I, you know, I don't know what that is. And so I literally, like, did that. And I shifted my schedule. I moved my hours to later time, and I made a decision. I remember clearly making the decision, like, I'm going to get wasted every night. Like, that's my new plan. And I did. And I would go. I would start work at noon to 8, go to my friend's house, and we'd get wasted every night. And then I would wake up late, and I would go to work. And it was the perfect schedule, and I enjoyed it. And I came back with vengeance, really. I really came back, like, doing things I said I would never do. I started crossing lines, and I started doing, like, crazier stuff, and I didn't really care. And I had been pretty semi-abstinent for a year, and so it just had this like whiplash reaction, and I came back stronger. And I spent the next 4 years drinking and doing drugs and trying to make my parents proud. That was like my mission. I was gonna drink, do drugs, and do whatever I wanted, and make everyone proud, make everyone happy, and have a successful life. And I failed miserably. Every 6 months, something would happen, and everything would crumble. I mean, you know, it was literally like I just constantly was like getting my stuff together and trying to like figure it out. I remember I had this book, and I would things always just get so bad. I remember having to like pull out this book and be like, what are we gonna do here? You know what I mean? I had to draw a plan or something. I was like, this is bad, and I would get my act together, and I was going to start a business, and then literally, like, my first appointment, the night before, I drank so much, you know, I didn't use, tried not to drink liquor, but we had 151, and I literally got, like, I was green the next day, I got alcohol poisoning, I was, like, really, really sick, I couldn't make it to that first appointment, and, you know, and I didn't think anything of it, you know, but it was my first appointment, and then a week later, I totaled my car, so that got rid of the business, because I didn't have a car anymore, And so that went down the drain, and then I had to like refigure it out, and I tried college, and you know, tried to make that work, you know what I mean? But things happened, and every 6 months something would happen, and the last something was it was 4 years later, and every time something the bad stuff would happen, I would kind of crumble. I remember thinking like maybe those AAs were right, you know what I mean? That kind of haunted me, and I remember like seeing the meetings when I would drive sometimes, and I get like scared of the meetings, and I didn't want to go back to AA. I hated AA. I hate the whole idea of it, and what happened to me was after 4 years, I remember I asked my girlfriend, you know, I was like, we should get married, and she said I can't marry an alcoholic, and I said, who's alcoholic? You know what I mean? And like, it was very confusing, you know what I mean? And she said, my dad was an alcoholic, and I can't marry an alcoholic. And I was still confused, and then she said, maybe we should end this. And I was like, and then she like walked me to the door, you know what I mean? And I left, and I was like, and I like blacked out for a month. It was like bad. And I mean, I remember coming to, like, in that month, and to like a psychic commercial in the middle of the night, and I remember thinking like, I remember, like, what is wrong? Like, I knew something was wrong. I even forgot, like, I was going through a breakup. You know, that's how far gone I got. And I remember thinking, like, she would know what's wrong with me. You know what I mean? I just had a sense. And then I continued to get wasted again. And someone knocked on my window and, like, dropped off some alcohol and my credit card. And I was like, oh, thank you. And I continued. And after that rampage, I came back and I tried to go to college. And I remember, I'll never forget my teacher after that winter break. And I went back and she was like shocked. She was like, "What's wrong with you?" Like I was like, "What? What? I must have looked really like unhealthy." And she was freaked out. Kind of freaked me out while she was freaking out, you know. But I didn't really, you know, like I gotta wear glasses more and I don't know. Like I just knew like I had to like avoid this. And then what happened to me was I finally had run out of money. I maxed out 40 credit cards and I had run out of all friendly direction. I didn't know where I could. I remember driving my car, my last tank of gas, and I had nowhere to go. And I felt so crazy. I just felt like driving my car into a tree. You know what I mean? And I felt kind of hopeless. And I remember thinking like my arms wanted to hit the tree, and I was like, whoa, this is not good. You know? And I remember thinking like, okay, I'm gonna stop drinking and doing drugs for 1 month. And that was the first time I ever said that. And I never said, like, I would never say that. That was like a crazy, it was like saying, I'm not going to breathe air or I'm not going to drink water. It's like, I would never say I was going to stop drinking. And I, you know, I was going to stop many other things, but not drinking and doing drugs. But I said that, and I think I went to my mom's house, and I knew I needed, like, some kind of help. I wanted to get some medicine. And so I asked her if I could go see a psychiatrist, and she gave me some cash, and I looked at the Yellow Pages, and then I found somebody. I went over there, and I sat down. Again, I paid the guy, and I said, you know, I told him what's going on, and he said, you know, my brother's an alcoholic, and he's sober in AA, and he's like, sounds like you're an alcoholic, and you have to go to AA. And I was so angry. I was like, no. I was like, can you give me some pills to make me feel better? And he was like, no. And I felt like I just got robbed. You know what I mean? He just took my money, and it wasn't getting what I wanted. And I left, and I went to my parents' house. And my mom was gone now, and I was going to get a glass of water. I grabbed the glass, I put it down, I grabbed her bottle of wine, and I poured it, and I drank it, and I said, now I can begin. And then, for some reason, I got some guy I didn't like, and we went to this AA meeting. And he had a bunch of charges going to go to court. And we went to this AA meeting, we sat in the back, and by the end of the meeting, I really had to drink at that point. I was like, okay. I was like, tonight we're going to drink, but I'm not going to get arrested. That's the plan. And so I changed my plan from not drinking for 1 month to we're going to drink tonight but not get arrested. We went. I got that extra change left over from my mom's money she gave me for the psychiatrist, and I got a case of Corona. Went to the other guy's house. We sat on some crates because that's the only furniture he had, and we drank some Coronas. And then the guy got paranoid, and he thought the cops were coming. So we ran out the back. There was no cops. He just was paranoid. And that was weird. We got in my car, and I had someone else drive my car because I wasn't going to get arrested. And the guy blew the clutch, and the cops showed up, and they immediately arrested me. And they let the other guys go. And I was like, this is so messed up. And I was, like, sitting in the back, you know. And I'm in the back of this cop car. Now, I have a green card. I had two drug charges already. If I get a third drug charge, my lawyer told me I'd get kicked out of the country. And there was drugs on the passenger side door from one of the guys I was with, and they opened that door, and I'm in the back of this cop car. They let the other two guys go, so that didn't seem fair to me. And then, so I'm in this back of this cop car, and they're searching my car, and there's, like, bags of clothes. It's just taking them forever. And I'm watching them. They're standing right next to the drugs because they opened the passenger side door. And there's two of them, and I was, like, passing out. I was, like, coming to, and I was, like, no. And I, like, pass out, and I come to. I was, like, no. You know what I mean? It was, like, it was very repetitive. And then I just knew that, like, something was going to happen now. Like, I knew, like, I'd done it. I had done it. Like, they're going to find these drugs, and I'm going to get kicked out of the country. And a part of me was kind of relieved that, like, I can stop this cycle of, like, living like this, and just knew, like, something was going to change. And I kind of felt relief, and there was a surrender that occurred, and I really believe that as a result of that surrender, I said a prayer. I had never been to church, didn't grow up religious at all, but I said a prayer because I had nowhere else to reach. And the prayer I said is, God, don't define the drugs, and I'll try AA. And I hated AA. And I believe now that was like a gracious prayer that came out of my mouth. It wasn't really my idea, and it was just something I said. And these cops searched the car for an hour and a half. They took me to the station. In the morning, they woke me up and said, get ready, you're getting out. And I said, well, it's my charges. They said, you're just a drunk in public. And I knew they didn't find the drugs. And I was like, sweet. And I remember thinking, like, I can go right back and do what I'm doing. It was like, my head was like, I had a plan, you know, like instantly. And then I was being nagged by this feeling, like, why did I say this prayer? You know, and it was nagging at me. And I remembered, and I thought about it for a minute. I remember what they told me in AA when I wasn't willing to do stuff. They said, it sounds like you haven't hit a bottom. And I was sitting in jail thinking, but what's my bottom? And I, you know, I had a moment of clarity, and I realized that my bottom was when I'm dead, because I was just hanging out as low as I could for a 22-year-old who had parents that wouldn't kick him out of the basement, you know. And so I was just hanging out as low as I could, and it was just my time. And a part of me didn't want to die, and so I figured I would keep my word. But really, I wasn't a word keeper, you know what I mean? I stole drugs from my friends. I didn't really care. I didn't keep my word for anything. But really what I did is I surrendered again. You know what I mean? It was another surrender, and it was the result of some kind of grace in my life. And I did the most amazing thing I ever did. I went to my car. I took all the stuff out of the passenger side door. I threw it in a dumpster. I got in my car, and I called 411. They connected me to the AA hotline, who talked me into, like, going to this meeting nearby. And I just went to that meeting. I literally went straight to an AA meeting, I mean, after getting out of jail, which, again, is, like, has to be some kind of grace, because that's not, like, I hated AA. You know what I mean? It was the last place I was going to go, and I get to this meeting, and at the meeting, they surrounded me. They knew I was new, I guess, and they asked me what was going on, and I told them briefly what had happened, and they interrupted me and said, sounds like you need to ask for help. And everyone got quiet, and they looked at me. I looked at them. I'm thinking, why are these people trying to break me? I just got here. You know, I even looked at the door. And I thought, I didn't want to go back to where I came from. And I didn't even want to say it. And I didn't even mean it. But the words came out of my mouth. I said, will you help me? And I didn't even mean it. It was just like, oh. Like it came out, and I was, like, kind of disgusted by the words. And they all lit up, and they all got excited. And all these guys started giving me a phone number, which also seemed disturbing to me. And so I got all these phone numbers. And then they invited me to the diner to have lunch. So I went with them. to the diner, you know, and we just hung out. And then they invited me to the meeting later that night. I went to the meeting that night. And then they took me to some party at somebody's house, and there was a lot of people having fun. I was very uncomfortable. They were not. And then someone said, "Do you have any drugs or alcohol in your house?" And I said, "I do." And they said, "Well, why don't you spend the night here, and we'll help you clean up tomorrow morning." And I was like, "No, it's okay." It's like, that didn't seem like a good idea to me. But later that evening, when we were walking to the car to go home, I saw my head working, and I knew what I was going to do. I knew I was going to, I was like, I know where I'm going to get this and that. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I turned to the guy and said, "You know, you're right. I think I'm going to get wasted when I get home. Can I spend a night here?" And they said, "Sure." So we spent the night, and then we went the next day with the crew, and we found more stuff than I knew about, which was disappointing, but it was all gone. It was very sad. It was a waste of money, but it was gone. And they took me to meetings, and I went to meetings every day. We went to diner almost every night, and I was uncomfortable. Everyone else seemed very happy, and they knew each other. I didn't know anyone, but I kept going. No one else was picking me up, you know. No one's coming to my house besides AA people, so I was just going along, and people took care of me. They picked me up. I went to two meetings a day. I went to the noon. We hung out. I was getting there was like a crew of us, like, just getting passed around. and I remember a month going by, and the first sign of me doing well was my dog. I had a Dalmatian. He was a good dog, and he would eat my weed. And if I smoked a cigarette, he would leave the room. If I smoked marijuana, he'd bang on the door and until he got in. And there was alcohol, he'd tip it and drink it. And so he was definitely my dog. And when I used to come home, he used to come to the door all happy when he was younger. And for years he hadn't come to the door. And when I was 30 days sober, he came to the door all excited. And it was like, oh my God, things are getting better. You know what I mean? It was clear. It was like a sign. Like things were looking up. And because I still wasn't sure if I should be in AA. Seemed like a cult. Seemed kind of crazy. Didn't seem like a place I should be in. Just I wasn't sure. And I remember 3 months sober. I took this guy. We got my clutch fixed, so now I had a car. And I took this guy home, and he was a month sober, and he wasn't sure if he should be here or not. And I told him that I understood. I felt the same way, but things are getting better. And I dropped him off. And I remember driving home, and I just felt so good. It was unbelievable. I remember thinking, this was better than any kind of drunk or high I ever had. It just felt so good. And I remember just being like, ah, this is... And I knew that it was because I helped this guy, and I knew it had something to do with God. I didn't really know anything else. I just knew, I'm helping this guy, and something to do with God, but I'm feeling really good. And I'm an alcoholic. I like to feel good. And so I ran with that. I started helping as many new people as I could. I drove a lot of new people home, and I just got hooked on helping new people. It just became my thing, and it helped me so much because, you know, I would talk to my sponsor, and, you know, I'd be like, "Sponsor, I got no money." I had 45 max on credit cards, you know, in high interest. It was brutal, and I didn't have a job, and he wanted me to go to two meetings a day, which seemed like, I was like, dude, I got no money. This is crazy. And he's like, "If you can stay sober, everything will work out," right? And, you know, that just that standard answer that I felt like I was getting in AA, you don't understand. He's just like, "No, do AA, you'll be fine." I'm like, "It doesn't seem like it's going to work out," but I'm like, okay, I guess. And so I go pick up this new guy, and new guy gets in my car, and he's like, you know, this guy's just been in and out of jail forever, and he had a lot of problems, and he was like, "Man, I don't know why we're going to this meeting. I got to make money. I got no money." And it was clear to me that this guy should absolutely be going to a meeting. You know what I mean? If he couldn't go to a meeting and stay sober, it didn't matter. It didn't matter if he was making, you know, 200 grand a year. He wasn't gonna make it. You know what I mean? It was clear to me that this guy had to go to a meeting. And then I was saying the same answer that my sponsor gave me to this guy, right? Yeah. And then I'm like, oh my gosh. You know what I mean? And I realized now I can see, I can't see myself. I can't see the true nature of my problem, and I need to listen to these people more. And so by me helping more new people, I was able to take real good suggestions because I wasn't going to listen to them if I didn't. So for me, helping new people was absolutely critical. It probably was a game changer, and I don't think I would have made it if I didn't have new people to help. And so it was important for me to do that. And it constantly, you know, helped me surrender because I'm not naturally, I don't surrender easily. And so it definitely was always helping new people, even to this day. You know what I mean? I was telling someone I sponsored on the way here that I take a meeting to jail, and I sponsor people in the jail, and we go through the steps, and had a bunch of guys, we're going through the third step, and, you know, and it just reminded me of somewhere else where I need to surrender, you know what I mean, and let go of the results. And it just became like, you know, even to this day, you know, I still need it. And let me go back. And how are we doing on time? Okay. So I get to this spot where I'm not able to trust a sponsor. This is one of my things. You know, everyone has like a different thing, their own challenges, I guess, in AA. And for me, I had no problem with the home group. I had no problem praying. Even though it was praying was new to me, and I would just do it. They just said, this guy, I'll never forget the first man I went to. I told him what was going on, and he just yelled powerless. And then he told me I should pray every morning and ask God to help me stay sober and say thank you at night. And I just kind of ran with it. I just did it. I felt uncomfortable. I felt like I was talking to the wall. I would close the door so no one would see me. And but I would just do it. And I was doing it, and I was staying sober. And so I didn't want to change it. So I didn't change it. And so that's what I did. And but every 6 to 8 months, I got a sponsor. But I couldn't trust people. I just had this thing where I just, like, if they were speaking from a podium, I could trust them. But if they were talking to me directly, I just felt like I couldn't trust them. And so so that meant that I struggled with sponsorship. And I had a hard time trusting a sponsor. And if they got mean, I would, like, just, like, I wouldn't talk to them anymore. I mean, it just wasn't a good working relationship for me. And it was tough because, like, I had to get better, and I wasn't getting better. You know what I mean? I was still, you know, unrecovered, essentially. I would go to meetings and feel good. I helped new people and feel a little bit better. But I needed, you know, I didn't know that I needed to, you know, do the steps. So every time, every, like, 6 to 8 months, I'd want to drink. And I would get resentful. I would start hating everybody, and I'd want to drink again. I get, you know, alcoholism, untreated alcoholism would come back, and then I would remember that prayer I said that I would try AA. God, don't let me find any drugs, I'll try AA. And by this point, I knew what that meant. That meant that I had to do the 12 steps. And I knew I hadn't, honestly, I have a moment of honesty where I just knew, like, I hadn't done the 12 steps. And then because I brought God into the scenario, I would say, like, another prayer, and I would stay sober another day. But I knew I hadn't done the 12 steps, and then I would try again. I'd find some other guy and ask him to help me, and, you know, eventually get resentful and kind of back away from him, you know, and then want to drink again. And then I remember that I said a prayer, and I'd want to drink again, and I'd say a prayer, and I knew I'd done the 12 steps again. I did that 3 times. The third time, I got this guy, and I didn't ask him to sponsor me. I didn't even like him, but I knew he was recovered because it was obvious, and I related to his story. So I related to the way he drank. I knew he understood my problem. He was like me, you know, and so I related to him, and I asked him if he would just take me through the steps, and he said he would, and he just told me what to do out of the big book, and I just did it, and he just showed me exactly in the book, like, literally, like, this is the sentence you should do, and I would go do it. I'd come back, you know, I did a 4th step, and then we did a 5th step. I took days off of work to do my 5th step. And I was going on a surfing trip to Costa Rica with a bunch of guys in AA, and he told me not to come back until my 8th step was done. So there on the trip, I did my 8th step, came back, which was devastating, actually. You know, the funny thing about my 4th step was that I finally saw that, like, I saw, like, what I had done wrong. I had to do the 4th step 6 times, by the way, just to throw it out there. You know, I had to, my first list was like, these are the people that have destroyed my life. You know what I mean? I was like, here you go, right? And then he was like, no. You know what I mean? And then it's like, all right, these are the people that I, you know, hate. And it's like, no. And I couldn't see my part. And I'll tell you, the most amazing part is, like, when he showed me this part, it was a game changer. And I bring this up because I think it's important. In the big book, it makes us write the 3 columns. And then it says, like, you know, we got to get rid of resentments, but how? And it says, this was our course. And it says that we had to realize these people wrong us were perhaps spiritually sick. And so I had to realize each name was, like, perhaps spiritually sick. And then I had to ask them, I had to ask God to show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that cheerfully grant a sick friend. So I would say that prayer, and I would think about a buddy of mine, Lou, who spoke here, actually. And I would think about, like, he could do no wrong. So I just would compare them, like, to my friend and just think, like, okay, if he's sick, I wouldn't be mad at him. So I can't be mad at this guy. And then I would say the next prayer, like, you know, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. So I would say these prayers, and then I'd make a decision not to retaliate or argue. And then I would go and I would write down, you know, where I'd been selfish, where I was dishonest, where I was self-seeking, where I was frightened. And then I would disregard them involved entirely twice, because that's what it tells us to do twice, you know, and then keep writing. And I would write all that down. And then you know, and I started to feel relief almost instantly, and I started to feel a little bit better, and I continued to do that, and for each name, and I mastered it because I did it like 100 times, and I felt lighter even just from the fourth step, and then I did the fifth step, but that was a game changer for me. You know, saying the prayers was important for me, and realizing that they were sick, it helped a lot. And then I when I wrote the eighth step, it was really unbearable because once I wrote like pages and pages on my family, you know, it was unbearable, you know, because I could only think about so many harms I'd done at once, but I could turn pages, you know what I mean, more than once, you know what I mean, and I was just turning them, and it was devastating, you know what I mean, for me, and I realized for the first time that like I had harmed, you know, so it's easy to forgive all of a sudden, like all of a sudden I'm like, you know what, we should just let everybody off the hook, you know what I mean, but I became very, very motivated on how am I going to fix these, you know what I mean. The eighth step really brought that out in me. Like, you know, writing that list was like, okay, how am I going to fix this? And, you know, I don't really know how. But I, you know, came up with some kind of a plan, and my sponsor helped me out a lot, changed my plan tremendously, and we came up with a new plan. And then a couple of weeks later, I had a wedding to go to for my cousin, and my uncle was going to be there. He didn't even make the eighth step, but we had gotten a fist fight when I was 14, and we never talked again. And I realized, like, oh, my God, I don't want to see him. And we came up with a plan. You know, I got to make amends to him, but it wasn't like in the traditional sense. I tried, you know, I was supposed to wait till he got sober. He was drunk the whole week. And then I pulled him aside at the very end, because if he didn't get sober, I had to pull him aside. I pulled him aside at the end. And all I got to say to him was, when I was younger, I'd done a lot of stupid things. And he stopped me. He didn't want to talk about it anymore. He just said, no, don't. You know, he stopped me. We went back inside. You know, he had tears on his face. But the most important thing was that when I got on that plane to come back, I had felt different. That something inside me was replaced, that I stood a little taller and hummed a little quieter, just my head was a little quieter, just felt a little bit more whole, a little warmer inside, and that feeling didn't go away. You know, like, you know, I would feel good after meetings, I'd feel good after helping people, but that feeling would go away. But this was like a permanent change in my beingness, and it felt better, and I was sold. I was like, wow, like just one man did so much for me. And I, next time I was at my mom's house, he called, and my mom said, you want to talk to him? And I said, sure. And we talked for like an hour and a half, and we talked about everything, and we're close, and it's different now, you know. And I became sold on the amends process, and so I started paying back all the debt as fast as I could. I did run into a little hiccup because my primary purpose changed from like staying sober and helping people to like pay off my debt as fast as possible, which I started getting uncomfortable, and I was at a tradition meeting, and I just kind of hit me all of a sudden, and I, you know, remember that I still have to, like, it's not a race to get out of debt. It's just I got to just keep it going forward. And what I discovered, that I felt just as good paying $20 a month, which is all I was paying in the beginning, when I was paying, like, you know, $5,000 checks a month. And so it didn't change the feeling. As long as I was getting out of debt, I felt good. And when I would stop and go back into debt, it would feel really bad. You know, and so it was a very, you know, it was very directional. You know, it didn't matter how much. It just mattered that I was doing my best. And so I continued to pay it. I paid it off. I made the other amends, and at that point I became sold. You know, at that point I was like, I remember I was like, I would pray all the time out of gratitude. You know what I mean? I remember like almost being teary, like on how comfortable and happy I was, and I was sponsoring people and they were staying sober, and they were getting better, and that was awesome. And I was like laughing all the time, having a good time. You know, I wasn't depressed anymore. I felt like I was gonna be depressed forever, and so you know that went away. That was awesome. You know what I mean? And I could, all of a sudden, I'm achieving things that I wanted to achieve, and I would put my mind to it. Before, I couldn't do that. I remember before I got sober, I said I was going to go to Hawaii on New Year's Eve for like a whole year. On New Year's Eve, I was in my parents' house at 10 o'clock, ran out of alcohol and drugs. And I was like, oh, you know, it didn't make it happen. A few months later, I got sober, and all these people in our group went to Hawaii and all jumped out of a plane at midnight. And I remember, I mean, it was like a dirty gotcha, because I remember being like a week sober and watching the videos, like all watching the videos at the house. And thinking like these guys were where I wanted to be, you know, and it was nice because it was like it really reinforced me staying in that early time. But it was, you know, now I'm sober, done the steps, and I was like, I'm gonna get into graphic design, and I did, and everything I put my mind to, I could achieve, and it was amazing, you know, and it just felt good. And me and my sponsor, we looked at all my relationships, you know, and we wanted to change those, and so we'd focus on making them better. I would go to my mom's house once a week and, you know, hang out with her, and for months she didn't really know why I was there. You know, she was like, "Why are you here?" And I was like, I don't know, just hang out with you. She didn't get it. It took her a while, but then after a while, she started putting me to work, and you know, she'd make me clean out the attic, and so I was just doing that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden, my mom, she could say something, and I would yell at her. She was afraid of me walking eggshells. That wasn't nice when I was drinking, and now that I was sober, you know, it wasn't like that. It wasn't that much better, but it was getting a little bit better. And I would go every day once a week, and my dog started to die, and she'd take really good care of him. And she'd have these towels around his waist, and she had this huge pile of towels in the garage that were like nasty. And I would come on Sundays, and we would clean them together with hot water and bleach, and we'd wash them all together and hang them up and to dry. And she did that for months. I mean, maybe like 9 months she took care of him, and our dog was still happy. He just couldn't, his back legs weren't working. So she would like walk him around, and you know, she did a great job. But I'd go there once a week and help her clean, and then we'd go get Starbucks afterwards and talk. And that was like the beginning of the change. We got close, you know, and I didn't ever snap at her. I didn't respond. I just kept my mouth shut. She would say things but it was funny because once I started doing that, she didn't irritate me anymore, right? You know, it's like she changed or something, but it was just my reaction. And our relationship changed and we got close and we're still close and that's good. And she loves my son and I'm close with her. And, with my dad, once I paid him back the money that I owed him, right? Our relationship changed completely. You know, I think it was, at that point, I think he had more respect that I paid him back, and we became like friends, and we got to know more about each other. And he wanted to buy a place in Miami to retire, and I helped him do that, which was amazing because I wasn't really helping anybody before that, and so I got to help him, and which was amazing. And now I get to help a lot of people in my family, which is awesome, and it's pretty sweet. And you know, and I love the amends because it really just changed the story. You know, if I died when I got sober, it would have been like a sad story and just ended. And because of the amends process and really because of the home group, you know, having the group and people in AA, five before, right? Is that right? Okay, just checking. Okay. And having the people in, you know, it took a village for me. You know, I mean, I would go to my home group and help set up and like hang out and help clean up and participate. And on family events, I would do the same. I just naturally would just do it. You know, I was taught here, really. And I would go to my Thanksgiving, I'd show up, I'd bring something, I'd participate and not be the center of attention, but participate and clean up and kind of be helpful and get out. And, you know, and I learned how to act right with people here in AA, in this playground here. And I, you know, there was a lot of stuff that happened, and I'm very grateful. I would say, you know, something happened later on. I continued to do the steps, and I continued to, like, help people. For me, taking an H&I to an institution once a week is, I think, absolutely mandatory, because I get so much out of it. I took a meeting to Chantilly Detox for like 4 or 5 years, and then when they kicked me out, not because of anything I did, but they just did that to everybody, or they just kicked us out. And I remember noticing like a loss of like dosage of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it was I was like, my diet was like malnutrition, really. And I started to look for another one, and I found a homeless shelter in D.C., St. Elizabeth's. And so I went there for about 6-7 years, and, you know, and that brought my dose up. And so I believe I got to have one kind of H&I once a week. For me, it's a game changer. It really, I could walk into like a Chantilly Detox. I remember walking into having problems, and I'd walk out there, I couldn't remember my problems. You know what I mean? I was like, I knew I had problems, but I couldn't remember them. They were gone. And I was like skipping. Yeah, I was light, you know. And many times I'd walk in there depressed over something. I'd walk out like happy, you know. And I had like 9 years sober. I was dating this girl for a few months, and we weren't getting along, and we're gonna break up. And she was pregnant, and so we she wanted to keep, and so we tried to make it work. It didn't work out. We broke up when he was 6 months old. Her family is rich, and they didn't want to share custody. And so that was devastating to me, and I didn't have that much money. I had $200 left over at the end of every month because I had bought nice stuff and nice cars, and I didn't really have a reason to save, but I wasn't being smart. So that became like a very big source of fear, and not being able to see my son. And the reason I bring this up is because I did a few things right. You know, at that time I was taking a meeting to Fairfax County Jail, and I would go there once a week, and we would We would share our stories, we'd read the book, a few paragraphs, and talk about it, and let them talk about it, and we kind of keep going. And I did it with Noah and Luke, actually, and then some people would show really high interest, right? And then I would take those individuals and meet with them one-on-one and take them through the steps individually at the jail. And, you know, there was a period of time, it was like, you know, I kind of call it like the dark ages, because I couldn't, you know, we had just broke up, and she wanted to get back together, but I wanted some kind of, like, agreement if we didn't get back together, because she, like, took him hostage, and I couldn't see him for 2 weeks, which is very upsetting. And she wouldn't agree to anything, so she was like, she said, we're a package, you know, you either get both of us or you don't get any of us, and I didn't really like that hostage situation. And so we didn't get back together, long story short, and that was a big source of resentment and fear. And And I didn't have that much money, and I'd go meet these attorneys. It cost so much money. I didn't have the money, and her family was rich. They had a lot of attorneys, and so I was afraid. But the one thing I did was I would go help these guys in jail. And I mean, at that time, I was you know, the level of fear and resentment was so potent that praying couldn't help me, going to meetings didn't help, talking to my sponsor didn't help me, like nothing was helping me. You know, I mean, I was just so angry. But the thing that helped me was that when I would go into that elevator at the Fairfax County Jail, down three levels into like a tiny room, and wait for 30 minutes for some inmate to come down, and then we would talk about his resentments and his amends, you know what I mean, and what he's got to do to make amends. And I would be there for 3 hours, and I would leave there. I was on the way there, I was angry, really angry. When I left there, I was doing the moonwalk, literally. I would go to a party down the street with sober people and dance for the rest of the night. But you can't dance when you're angry, you know what I mean? And so, so I'd have a good time, and I'd forget about it. Around Wednesday, I'd remember why I was angry again, you know what I mean? And I would be resentful again, and then on Saturday night, I would go back. And, I decided I was flipping houses to try to make the money to pay the attorneys. And, you know, long story short, I was able to make enough money to pay the attorneys and the private investigator, thank God. It's terrible to say that on the microphone, it's being recorded, but oh well. And but basically what happened is it all kind of worked out. You know, I mean, we settled. We were able to get them in a position to settle from scaring them for lying under oath. And we got a reasonable schedule. And, you know, I'm close with my son. He's 7 years old. You know, I almost have 50-50, a little bit less, but it's fine. And we, you know, the most important thing is that I'm close with him. You know, I'm a good dad. You know, he's, you know, I love him. He loves me. He knows me well. We have a good relationship. And I didn't drink, right? And I didn't do anything crazy either, right? But it's I have to give almost all the credit to helping people in jail, because if I hadn't done that, I didn't get relief from talking to my sponsor. I would get more angry. You know what I mean? Going to meetings didn't help me. I would get more angry. You know what I mean? Praying didn't help me because I felt like I was being disjusted, you know, like it didn't seem like God was helping me at the time. But I was able to, I remember I had to meditate an hour a day in the evenings just to like come back down to my senses, because I was so irritated that I couldn't even like sleep. I had to like, but what I did ultimately was I just did the steps even harder, you know what I mean? And I'm lucky that I was well plugged in and I was doing AA. You know, my great grand sponsor says, you know, AA is like, if you do the steps in A, it's like holding on to the bar on a bus. You know, you don't need it until you hit a pot, you know, like until you hit something. And if you're not holding on, you're going to hit your face, you know what I mean? And I remember when I was new, this new guy lost his job and he drank. He was 9 years sober. And he was mean to me, you know what I mean? He wasn't like helping new guys. He was like mean to new guys, you know what I mean? And he was a pitcher brother, so I remember watching that, and I remember thinking like wow, you know. And I watched other people go through problems that were helping people, and they overcame them. And I watched, you know, other people who didn't do the steps get problems. And, you know, I had a guy I sponsored 4 years. He went to India to get married, and he didn't tell anyone he was sober. He didn't go to any meetings for 4 months. And on the plane ride back, he couldn't stop himself from drinking. He literally couldn't. Like, it was a setup. Like, he had no idea it was coming. And it's amazing. He lost, like, all the powerlessness was just key. He had nothing between him and a drink. And it's you know, that's an extreme example, because he didn't go to any meeting for 4 months. But I've had two of my running buddies who I got sober with last year start drinking, and they got very successful, and they stopped going to as many meetings, you know what I mean? And then they First, they stop helping new people. I feel like it starts with that. When you stop, you know, they stop sponsoring people because it's hard to tell someone to do the deal. Every time I help somebody do the deal, I'm like forced to kind of do it too, you know. And so it always brings me back. Like, it's like, you know, the best way to get to the beach is like take someone to the beach. And it's like by helping this guy get on the beam and do the deal, I would remember like, oh, I have resentments. I gotta get rid of him. You know, all of a sudden I remember I have resentments. You know, and I gotta get rid of him because I'm telling this guy he's gotta get rid of resentments. And so it was, I have to constantly, for me, help new people, and so it starts with stop helping them, because then I forget the most important thing, and then it just deteriorated for them, and then they, you know, it's funny, once they stop going to so many meetings, they start saying stuff like, they would go to a meeting and they couldn't figure out why they were there, like, it didn't make any sense, because they're not helping anybody, they're not staying in touch with anybody, right? It gets stupid to go to a meeting when you haven't been that much, and then so they stop going, and then they have to look for fun activities, you know, and then they eventually go to bars or wherever, and then they start drinking again. And it's sad because I've watched them. Now one of them is, like, going down. He had a great business with 50 employees. Now it's 15 employees, and it's getting worse. And so it's sad to watch that happen. But you know, more importantly for me, it's you know, I think it's just important for me to share these things. Okay, I got 1 minute. I'm doing good. All right. I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, these steps work. And, you know, especially because I worked them straight out of the book, out of this book, no other book have I worked the steps, and for me, and I, you know, I'm grateful they work. I hope I continue to work them. You know, for me, it's really about, you know, trusting God, you know, cleaning house and helping others. And it's a simple ingredient. And I feel like it's mandatory. I do a big inventory every morning and a long prayer and meditation every morning. You know, I help a lot of people stay sober, and I try to trust some kind of God. But thank you so much. Thanks for letting me speak. Thank you.